Hello, Cheryl.
Hello.
So today we're going to be talking about the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation. And I mean, there's two big things that we're going to discuss today. One is the recent announcement of the list of grantees, the first grantees. And I'm going to get the name of that initiative wrong.
It's the Doris Duke Performing Artists Awards, but this first group are the Doris Duke Artists.
Yeah.
That's
amazing, and this huge kind of surge of energy went through the field when those names were announced.
I'm so glad to hear that. It's really, I mean, because we had a few bumps in getting all the announcements out to the press, but we sent out about 700 emails from here, but it surged like wildfire, I think, throughout the field. I think everybody was so excited about it, and we got such wonderful feedback on that from artists and organizations and funders. So we're excited about it.
And I want to come back to that, but I also want to let people know we are also going to talk today about the foundation, the artist residency grants, and that's a deadline that's in front of us. And people are right now trying to sort of strategize around that. And so we're going to talk about that today too, Cheryl. Thank you for being
great.
To do that. And hopefully maybe people can get their information here and your phone won't be quite so overwhelmed come deadline time. But
well,
let's go back first to the
–
let's go back to this, the announcement. So when you guys announced these first round, because it's the first round of these artists, right?
Yes. There will be five altogether.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm. But talk to me a little bit about the process of coming to these two enormous and interesting initiatives in our field. You've been working on developing these two ideas for how long?
It's been going on for about a year and a half prior to, there was a lot that happened within the board, the internal organization itself. Really, the genesis of it was, these are times that are really difficult for foundations because our portfolios have really decreased a lot. So, to make the decision to allocate an additional $50 million in this economic climate was a bit difficult. But really, I think our president, Ed Henry, when he came on board several years ago, it was one of his initiatives was to get this $50 million allocated to the arts program. We've had other $50 million initiatives with the medical program and the environment program, and so he felt it's the arts chance to do this. And his own background is in the arts. He was a professional dancer, so we are really excited that our president has an understanding of what it's like to be an artist in the field how artists struggle. So that was very exciting for us. It went through the board, and the board was very enthusiastic. They said the money should go directly to the artists in as much as we can get out to them. And so we took that challenge on, thinking about what kind of a program would be best to address the needs of the arts. And so our process is, I just want to also step back and say one thing, that this money, this $50 million, is above and beyond our normal grant making. So
yeah, you said that.
All of
I was
our other
come back
programs
to that.
Keep on going on.
Yeah.
They keep
no,
on
no,
going.
I think that, I mean, that's a remarkable thing, and it's worth pointing out that this is in addition to the regular granting program.
Yes.
And that's just a huge investment that is, I mean, the impact of this investment is going to be, I mean, already the foundation was already having its impact and does have its impact through the current programming, and you've added $50 million more into this environment. It's fantastic. Anyway,
we know what even small amounts of of funds can do for an artist and how they are able to really expand and grow and capitalize on even small investments. And so, but we also know that so many artists struggle in their daily lives. And I think what we do on a normal basis is to go out into the field and survey the field. And oftentimes what we do is engage independent consultants so that we can get honest feedback from the artists. But many artists come to us and tell us,
we're struggling with
a lot of issues in our lives. And so
I would imagine that the artists have less trouble being upfront and transparent with even some of the institutions, right? It's harder as an institution. I know that as someone who's had those conversations many times. The attempt to be transparent is actually quite complicated.
It is. And I think funders are well aware of the fact that it's difficult to have honest conversations. So our process is often when we're trying to create a new strategy or rethink our strategy, assess our strategy, we do engage independent consultants who go out into the field, talk to our grantees, talk to non-grantees, and try to get a feedback on what are the major issues, what are the things that are on their minds, what things keep them up at night. And then we get that information back and think about it for a while. And then that is the basis of how can we create the best possible program that's going to address those needs. We can't address all of them, so what are the highest priorities? And and we often go out and try to find out what those highest priorities are. But in the case of ours, we know that it's such a struggle for them in their daily lives just to have the normal kind of life that people have.
Right.
And what we wanted to was to create a program that gives dignity to the artists, that gives them choices, that gives them the opportunity to think, imagine, stretch themselves, try new things, fail and go back again and try something new. And so we wanted to give them that flexibility to do that. And that's why the majority of the funds in this program, the first program, which is called the Doris Duke Artists Awards, is a program that has mostly unrestricted funding. It's $225,000 of that is unrestricted. There's an important part of it, which is $25,000 toward a matching retirement fund. So if the artisan puts in $25,000 total, we will match it with 25 additional dollars, and then there's a third component, which is addressing the artist's relationship to audiences and so artists can spend those funds in any way that they would like to, for workshops, for talkbacks, for working on their websites, etc. It's really open to them to make those decisions. So that component is restricted in the sense that they have to use it toward audiences, but they don't have to. If they don't want to, then they won't get that money. But we're hoping that this will give the artists flexibility and time to really think about what they want. And we're working together with Creative Capital, wonderful partner in working with individual artists. We've been working with them on their regular program and the MAP fund, but they are providing staff to run the program and Rachel Ford is the new director of that program. She has a great background in working with individual artists.
Yeah.
And so they're providing us with a lot of structure for the artists, so that if they want to access the Creative Capital Professional Development Programs, they'll be giving them some advice on tax implications and trying to figure out the best ways that they would access the funds. And they're given 3 to 5 years to access the funds. So the artists will be able to create their own plan.
That's great. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You know, this that's I always like to sing out about the bright spots. And Ruby Lerner at Creative Capital has been such a visionary in this whole effort to try to figure out how to get support direct to artists.
No, it's just the part.
What kind of challenges did you run into there? We often hear that that's really hard, and it becomes the reason that so many of these programs are run through the institutions. You've managed to figure it out, and Creative Capital has managed to figure it out. What are the discoveries there in structuring something like that?
This program in particular?
Yeah, that being able to go right to the artist rather than... you've got one that's also going artist and institution together that we'll talk about shortly. But
yes. No, I think, we've heard so much, from the field, too. And also, you know the background to Creative Capital. It started when the NEA stopped giving funds directly to artists, and so many foundations jumped on board because they thought that was such an important component of what the field of philanthropy should be. But anyway, I think that Creative Capital we see that it's constantly learning and adjusting and really responding to the needs of the artists. They get so much feedback from the artists. The artists access so many of their programs and they all create new programs, which are called the professional development programs, to respond to the needs of the artists. So, a few years ago, they have a new program on technology to help artists build their websites, and they're now looking into legal issues, other things that the individual artists really struggle with. So, a lot of things that keep on morphing and changing within the organization, because Ruby's always out there in the field. There are the people who work at Creative Capital, so many of them are artists themselves, and so the needs of the field, they're just so closely attuned to that.
That professional development workshop was really consequential to the Bay Area when it first arrived there, and done every year for a number of years. The Z Space was the host of it, and just the careers, the robustness of the careers that people were able to plan for themselves as a result of the tools in that. I wish every artist had the opportunity. I'm just going to actually say the website so that people know what we're talking about. But it's creative-capital.org. Is where people will find it, and I'll put it on the blog as well. So they're your partner in this, and are they also partnering with you on the artist residency grants that the new deadline is coming up? Or are you running that directly?
We're running it in-house. We run very few programs in-house because we're a staff of three in the arts program: Ben, Cameron, myself, and Lillian Osei Boateng, who's our associate. But so we try to, that's why we do work a lot with intermediaries to get the funds out broadly to the field. But we said we're going to run this program in-house and see how it goes. And we're really excited about the prospect of more direct contact with grantees. And I may be eating those words later on, but really excited about, being able to talk to people directly. And it's sometimes when we're one step removed, when we work with intermediaries, it's difficult to have that contact.
Yeah, so. But this thing that you're doing, I'm just so I'm so fascinated by it, excited about it. And I would want, if I were you guys, I would also want to be as intimate with the learning as it happens as possible, because it's such a great new facet at this. So can you describe, because I would do a disservice, can you just describe what it is that this, how the residence, this particular residency program is focused on?
Yes. What we're trying to do is an artist residency program that works with presenting, producing, and service organizations that address the needs of the disciplines that we work with, primarily because Doris Duke had specific interests in the performing arts and in specific disciplines within the performing arts, jazz, contemporary dance, and theater. We are focusing just on those discipline areas and interdisciplinary work that is grounded in one of those areas. So, anyway, this program was conceived to try to address, I guess, some of the talk that we were hearing in the field was that artists feel disconnected to institutions. They feel like they're just coming in there for a very brief time to perform. They're for hire, or you know, they're engaged in very short periods of time at the institutions, and they may see part of it, or just see the stage, you know, and really not feel like they understand what's going on within the institution. And we felt that there's an opportunity for artists to really come together with an institution, become embedded in the institution in a different way, not to create a whole new piece per se, but to really reach an understanding with the institution so that it, the artist could come and help the institution think of itself in a different way, in the way it relates to audiences or the demand for the work. So
that's what I found so thrilling about this. You guys have even written in the guidelines that this program is going to focus on the demand side, where so many residency programs focus on the supply side. And I just, you know, I know so many artists in my work feel cut off from the effort to engage the community around their work. And it's so smart. I hope everybody goes and reads these guidelines, even if you're not planning to apply, because it's a real way to think about this this notion. Audiences are one way to measure engagement with your community, but this program is actually asking people to think broadly, including audiences, but even more broadly about how to create a residency with an artist that is focused on the demand, on the impact, presence, engagement of your community, not just whether people bought tickets.
Yes, yes. And also, what we want the artist to do is to build a relationship with the institution in a different way, to be able to go in and talk to the board, to talk to other parts of the staff other than the artistic part that they're so used to working with, and talk to the marketing people, development, you know, the tech staff or whatever. But how can an artist infuse some creative thinking in the ways that they work? And so it's really not about a project per se. I mean, it could result in something which is an experiment or a pilot that they want to address a specific community, reach out to a community that they haven't reached before, but it's important to the demographics of their institution. So really, it's these additional opportunities that will be provided to the institution. And what we're trying to do is to create also a structure where the artists are well compensated for the time that they're there. And they can also be there for periods of time blocked out over a multi-year period. It could be in a short framework, but it could also go up to 3 years. So depending upon the artist's schedule needs, et cetera, external needs, that they can chart out along with the institution a course of action.
When it seems to me that I just love this notion of starting from the demand side. It seems to me that it'd be pretty logical that a high frequency of these projects will ultimately develop supply as a way to address demand, in the sense that, you know, it might take shape around a specific project over time, or it might lead to an idea about a project based on this, you know, a careful plan of how are we actually generating demand. often, I guess maybe it's just my own, the limits of my own thinking around this, I often think in terms of the what the interaction is in the art, ultimately as the place this gets expressed or tested. Do you imagine that some of these projects are going to come into you? I mean, it's a brand new thing, and we say that, you know, 100 times. You're going to create this path by walking the process of selecting the residents, I'm sure. But I would imagine that you're prepared to see proposals that talk about expressing the engagement through the work itself.
Yeah, so I'm sure there will be that. But we're hoping that, you know, it'll also go beyond the stage, that it'll be how what's happening on the stage is going to affect the community.
Right.
In some way. Who are the people that should be there to see the work?
This is so smart.
Yeah, and I'm just, you know, just kind of from our personal perspective too, and some of one of our recent grantees, who's in D.C., Woolly Mammoth, has been went through our innovation lab with EMC Arts, and they talked about this whole idea of working with the playwright to see who should be in that audience.
Right, what's the audience?
Who is that play for? How are we going to reach those people, and what can we do in terms of programming to get to go into those communities and bring the right people there?
Yeah.
So I think that it's so kind of intriguing to think about not just getting the audience in there, but who is this play going to speak to the most?
Right.
And,
yeah.
You know, that's kind of an intriguing idea. And,
yeah, I'm in this really great new frontier here at Emerson, where I'm being encouraged on this idea. Let's see if I get it done. But Polly and I are trying to develop a course in, just for lack of a better word, we're calling it creative producing. But the notion that helping these, you know, a lot of these students at Emerson are really training for careers as artists, and trying to give a group of them the skills when they come out to be creative producer of their own careers, and thinking about that as, you know, producing the development life, producing the actual production, producing the audience, the actual audience that you meant when you picked this project, not just general audience, but producing that audience, and then producing the impact in that audience, and then producing the knowledge for the commons. Like this, try to think as thickly as possible about what it is that we try to do every time we start the work. That's why I get so excited about the way you framed this here, is because it actually demands you think about what demand are you creating and in what communities before you actually begin making the choices about the art.
Yes, it puts artists in a totally different position, I think. To really think about their work in a broader context, and interesting that it, you know, I guess a lot of artists they're generating it through their own needs, but to take that work and put it into the context of what does it mean for the society, the community that they're working with, it's
yeah.
an intriguing perspective to take, and I think that. You know, that presenters and producers will really benefit from the opportunity to have artists within their environment on a long-term basis. That's what we're hoping for.
Yeah.
They'll begin to see the value of having an artist really embedded there for a longer period of time, and how the artist can inject new ways of thinking or challenge old practices that they have.
Yeah.
And we want the artist to be an outsider enough that they can have those opinions, not so deeply already involved in an institution
right.
that they would feel, oh, I can't really say that. It might affect
right.
something that I'm doing with them in the future. But really to have that freedom to be able to express something that they see that could be changed. So.
Well, and it's also, you develop a kind of group mind in when you're in the day-to-day of the institutional survival. There are certain assumptions that just become rote, and the deeper you are in the day-to-day of an organization, the less you're actually aware that you've stopped questioning certain things. And that's one of the big benefits of, for example, the these residencies that are going on at Arena. The questions are very basic sometimes that, well, we forgot to ask that. But the playwright didn't see the answer, didn't hear the question asked, and so it has to be raised. And I think that's one of the real benefits. But I also am expecting that what will happen here, that leads me to my next question, but what will happen here is that even just being asked to think in this way, think in this order of what demand are we trying to create, and then therefore what engagements do we want to create, and what work do we want to be the vehicle for those engagements. That's going to create a lot of new innovations, probably, around this set of questions. What's the foundation's habit or plan for the dissemination of that learning in this program?
Actually, we're already talking with a consultant to help us really think this through. We're going to try to work very closely with the grantees to think about and evaluate their programs as they're moving along.
Mm-hmm.
So much of what we do is about experimenting with new ideas, and we don't expect that everything is going to be successful from the get-go. As a matter of fact, it's so many of the grantees have learned so much through things that weren't so successful, but they learned to tweak it or change it or adjust it, and then it became a greater success than they had even imagined. So, I mean, we're trying to have the grantees think, be really thoughtful about what they're doing to be strategic as they're moving along and to be bold, trying new ideas out that can really make a change, I think, by sharing it with the broader community. And so what we normally do is, working with outside people to evaluate the program that is shared with the broader community, and not just so much something that gets published online, but now so many of our ideas are getting disseminated out at conferences or webinars, things like that more people have access to in the broader community, because not everybody lives in the large urban areas.
And right.
The ideas are applicable everywhere. So we're trying to disseminate as broadly as we can. It's a challenge when we're such a small staff, but as you know, Ben is at every single conference.
Yeah.
Goes out and speaks. So
well, you're at a lot of them too, I have to say.
Yes. But we're trying to get the word out not only to the field but also to other funders, because I think being able to think about the way we fund the arts is an important idea to convey to other funders, that not everything has to be just about the next project, but really to think about what do artists really need in their lives? How can we address those needs? We can't do everything, but I think that it's important that we draw attention to the fact that these things are lacking. Especially things like healthcare and retirement and just quality of life issues for artists, and also, for institutions, for them to think about themselves in a more expansive way, how they can reach out into the community in a different way that will be so eye-opening for them.
Yeah. Martha Levy always talks about the Steppenwolf's role as a citizen of its community, not just cultural.
That's really inspiring.
I think that this is why I'm so excited about this. You're getting right at it, which is to say, I mean, using the word demand is actually a word that is accessible to a lot of people. It's also a challenge in a great way to rethink some things. But I've been so struck over the last, I don't know how many years I've been struck by it, but it's been, I guess, since I went to ARENA and got up out of the context of a single community, of how much of the world, how much of our communities, really, we're ceding to the disinterest, to the lack of demand, you know, and that more and more the campaigns got so focused on the people who are already coming. How do we get them to come more? How do we get more of them to come to us instead of the other place? We started to look at this 3-5% of our neighborhood that was actually cared about what we were doing as the entire universe that we would ever reach. And this program to me feels like we're asking artists to help us perceive our roles in our neighborhoods more broadly than just the people who are currently signing up to participate with us, and to find ways to relate to that world more broadly than simply to try to sell them tickets or even give them free tickets. Like, how do we actually relate to that part of the world, the 95% of the people who don't value what we do, and to try to relate to them in ways that we can't see? We're asking artists to create new ways of relating.
Yes, it's really, I mean, we're so excited about that opportunity to be able to have organizations think in different ways. I've been getting feedback from the organizations who are going to be applying about the conversations that it's really sparked within their organizations, and how they feel challenged by just even beginning to think about these things.
Yeah.
So I hope that, you know, we're just going to have a set number of grants, but we do hope that it challenges organizations to really stretch beyond what they've been doing, also to view artists as a different kind of a resource for them as well. So,
what kinds of questions are you getting that we could answer here and maybe reach some more people than one-on-one?
Some really, well, we're getting a lot of questions from universities and colleges too that present, but what we're really trying to do is focus on the professional presenters on campus that are separate organizations that have professional staff, and that's what they do primarily, because there are a lot of colleges and universities that do present, but it's coming out of the office of the Department of Theater or something like that, and what we're really targeting is the professional organizations. We're getting questions about the relationship of the artist to the organization and past and prior relationships, and I think what we're encouraging is that that the artists are not so deeply embedded that they, as you said before, you know, you get into this process of doing a work, the normal way of working, and you can't think outside that box. But what we're trying to get is artists that can infuse a different way of thinking, or that they, and we don't want the artist to feel like some future project that they have might be threatened by them being able to be honest about their opinion. So it's about that kind of honest exchange. We want artists to be able to feel that freedom that they can think in the most challenging ways with the institution. So there are a lot of gray areas, so we're trying to help organizations sort that out right now.
And is it your advice, I mean, in those gray areas for people to just call or email? I mean, you're so responsive, I can't imagine how hard that is to be as responsive as you are in a moment like this where people are trying to think differently over a funding opportunity.
It's better for them to email us because you know, it's difficult for us to answer phone calls. But but we're also thinking about we're going to have to do some kind of a webinar. So stay tuned. We'll post that on the website.
Okay, great.
As we get closer to the deadline. But may be able to arrange that. So, but in the meantime, people have questions, just have them email us. It's post, our email addresses are on the residency guidelines, which are on the website.
Yeah, and I'm going to put the link to the guidelines in the when we post this call, I'll put the link in there so that people will be able to get at it.
And do check out, have people check out the FAQ section too, because we're trying to address a lot of those questions there. But we'll be learning as we go along too as well, and with each new round,
life?
We hope that we'll be learning from past experience and adjusting and tweaking the program to that as well.
Yes, and there'll be other rounds. Everyone should know that.
There'll be five rounds of this to begin with. So this is all part of the $50 million allocation.
And you're expecting that you'll be able to fund somewhere, I think I read there, somewhere between 10 and 12 in this round, is that?
Depending upon, you know, the size of the organizations, smaller organizations with a minimum of $300,000 annual budget, they will be able to apply for $75,000. And that half of that goes to the artist, half to the institution. The larger organizations above 750 will be able to apply for $150,000. So we have about $1.5 million to distribute, and so it depends upon how many in the different categories we'll be able to fund.
And that's across all categories. So there will be, and you're. I haven't seen anywhere that there's X percentage for each of her of the. I don't know. I have this picture of Doris Duke because you guys are so good at always referring to her. So I always say, you know, I don't see anywhere that you're going to have a set number for each of her interest areas. And then I have a picture of who she is when I say that. I love that.
We're going to try to be. As you know, to distribute it as much as we possibly can, but really the best proposals will rise to the top. And we right now we don't have a set allocation per per discipline.
Yeah. So people should be thinking about it because the LOIs are due in June, right? People have a month, just about a month at this point. As you and I are talking, you have about a month to get the LOIs in. Thank you for spending the time. As you know, I sometimes think I'm such a geek because I love the whole infrastructure of what we do so much. And this just to me seems like a really great innovation and intervention in this the you know infrastructure of how we support and develop the role of the art in our world. So good on
you. We're excited about it, and it's a new way of focus for us too as well, and we're looking forward to how it's going to affect the artists and the organizations that we're funding.
So we
feel privileged that we're able to do this in so many
ways. Yes, and we, you know, everyone says, you know, thank you to the people who made it possible to do this, because this is really, it's just a wonderful addition, and it's great that it didn't take away from anything to do it.
Oh, thank you. No, we're grateful that we're able to do this. It's just such a wonderful opportunity for us professionally, and, you know, we're just so affected by the fact that that we can, you know, we have these additional resources that can go more directly to the artists and to the things that matter the most, I think, to the field. And hoping that it'll be, you know, embarking on new experimentation and new ways of thinking as well.
I'm sure it's going to be. Well, we will keep watching, and some of us will be, you know, participating, I'm sure. And it's exciting to be at the beginning, so more to come on this one.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time, Cheryl.
Okay.
Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.